With Warner Brothers set to release the Joker film, we take a look forward and backward at the psychotic DC comic villain on this edition of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is supported by SRC Incorporated, a not-for-profit research and development company whose goal is to bring a focus of respect, teamwork, and the freedom to innovate to the workplace. Learn more at srcinc.com/WAER.
Welcome to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee, the podcast that explores all kinds of pop trash. On October 4th, Warner Brothers Pictures will debut the new Joker movie starring Joaquin Phoenix based on the DC Comics Batman villain.
Can you please stop bothering my kid?
Sorry.
Arthur, I have some bad news for you. This is the last time we'll be meeting.
You don't listen, do you? You just ask the same questions every week. How's your job? Are you having any negative thoughts? All I have are negative thoughts.
Helping me set some expectations and dive deeper into the character is Pop Life podcast frequent flyer, Dr. Spooky. Kendall Phillips is professor of communications and rhetorical studies at Syracuse University. He is his expertise includes comic books, horror films, and pop culture. He is author of Projected Fears, Horror Films and American Culture, and is currently teaching a course on the Marvel Cinematic Universe at Syracuse University. Welcome back to the show.
Always good to be here. I wish I had a big maniacal laugh for you, but I just kind of have a kind of pathetic giggle, so that's about all I can do. But always good to be here.
Hey, agree or disagree, just right at the top, Joaquin Phoenix is an exceptional actor.
Agreed. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I expect he's going to bring a lot to this role.
Oh, yeah. This has got to be the I can out Heath Ledger.
So yeah.
Clearly, the bar has been set high. And in fairness, if anybody can pull it off, Phoenix has been known to pull off some pretty scary, brooding figures.
So. Yeah. I mean, if you need any evidence of his acting ability, I just send people straight to Gladiator.
Absolutely.
It's one of my favorite films of all time, and I thought his performance in that movie was just outstanding. So I expect a lot from him, and the write-up of this movie is just getting a lot of attention. Now, it premiered at the 76th Venice International Film Festival on August 31st, where it won the Golden Lion, which is the festival's highest prize. So it's already starting off with some pedigree there.
Yeah, and a lot of great press reactions, but also increasingly some controversy around the film itself.
It is, and we'll get into that. And this movie is billed more as a psychological thriller than it is, say, a comic book movie. So I expect, again, you know, some pretty good edge to it, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the interesting thing is to try to ground supervillains in reality. And so you don't have Thanos snapping and you probably aren't going to see a guy dressed as a bat, but you're going to kind of get a deeper internal look at what would this actually look like with this kind of character in the real world.
Right. Now, it's an origin story. Slightly different from the origin stories that we're used to with the Joker. So in some of the other origins, he falls into a vat of chemicals, which is how he gets his discoloration. Perhaps it changes. So he's a sort of a basic criminal,
yeah.
Kind of a sinister criminal who falls into some chemicals, gets discolored, and maybe develops some psychoses.
Yeah.
And in this portrayal, he seems to be a failed comic, someone who has been chasing a comedic career. He is under the treatment of a mental health professional, so we know that he's got some mental issues. And he is sort of derided and beaten up on and discarded by society. And sort of develops into a bit of a sociopath.
Yeah, which I think is drawn from, there was a run called The Killing Joke. And so this seems to be drawing on that origin story. Although I always love, there's a great line in one of the Batman comics where someone asks the Joker how he came to be. And he said, "There's so many variations of how I came to be, even I forget. I prefer to think of my past as a multiple choice question." And I kind of love that idea. I would like a multiple choice question for my past.
So yeah, you're right. What I've read to date is that it is sort of based on that graphic novel, Batman: The Killing Joke, and serves as a basis for the film's premise. But Phillips and Silver, the producers, otherwise didn't look to any other specific comic publications for inspiration for this. So this is pretty much it's an origin story, but a new, a really different take on the Joker. And I guess I find it very interesting that we're dealing with a sort of a comic book character, but without heroes.
Yeah, it's a funny approach to kind of do a deep dive into a villain in a world that is both without a superhero, as far as we can tell, and then also not connected to what could be the DC extended universe. So DC's clearly decided not to try like the Marvel strategy of tying everything together. So there's no clear sense that the Joaquin Phoenix movie is going to have any connection to Justice League, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Yeah, what I'm reading is that this is going to be the launch of DC Black, which is a series of DC-based standalone films. So I think you're right. They are going to get away from that connected universe and just do, you know, straight up independent, not independent films, but independent stories.
Sure, which gives them a lot more latitude to do a deep dive into a troubled character and not have to tie it into the bigger sort of moral universe of a superhero movie where the superhero, you know, eventually has to win and the bad guys get punished. So this changes the rules of those games.
Right, and we know I'm pretty sure there's no superhero in the movie because it takes place, some of the characters, we'll see some familiar characters in there. You will see Bruce Wayne, but he will be a boy. You will see his dad, who is, I think, running for mayor of Gotham City. And you'll see a couple of other, you'll see Alfred, the butler. So they exist, but they are not at a place where they're fighting crime. So this is really, I think, how Gotham really sort of took off in a chaotic environment or began to create a chaotic environment under the terror of the Joker.
Sure. It's a kind of flip to the traditional movie treatment, which is you have Batman and Batman's existence pulls somebody into like the great Tim Burton film. It sort of literally creates the Joker, or in the Heath Ledger and the Nolan films, suddenly he appears out of nowhere, but almost called into existence by Batman. Here you flip that. And so Joker is kind of first.
Right.
And probably at some point will become the origin for Batman to respond to this kind of chaotic evil.
Right. And it's already getting some controversy. It is apparently it's going to be a violent film. And there have been some warnings, even from the military, that there is some dark web chatter about potential shootings at theaters. And I've even seen where Phoenix was asked about it in a recent interview. He just got up and walked out.
Yeah, and apparently had never thought of that, which is troubling. You'd think about the consequences. And then, of course, I think part of that is it echoes so much the tragic shooting in Aurora, Colorado, and even the families of the victims there have written, not to say they shouldn't have the film, but just as people should be conscious of what it means to glorify, let's be honest, another angry, troubled white guy with a gun. I mean, we have way too many of those in the real world. Now, I'm not condemning the film, but it certainly tells you this film is dealing with some very real pertinent issues if we are having a controversy over a superhero villain movie.
Right. And I guess the dialogue around that, the discourse around that should be how thinly do we slice and dice that issue, because Phillips is citing or pushing back, saying, you know, why didn't we get this kind of pushback with John Wick films? You
sure.
know, just as violent, just as many gunshots. But you're dealing with, in John Wick, almost something that is a cartoon character of it in itself. So it's like, at what point do you begin to say that this is further away from reality than this particular story? And how might that impact people's bad choices and decisions.
Sure. I mean, not to do too deep a dive into film history, but you know violence has always been fairly controversial. Actually, not as controversial in America as it is overseas in Europe. We tend to get freaked out by sex, but violence has been controversial. And if you look at the history of violence in films, there's lots of violence in films that's not controversial, and it's usually either kind of cartoonish or distance violence, or it's violence for good purposes, and I'm using scare quotes there of good. So like Saving Private Ryan is one of the most violent films you'll ever see. The opening sequence is horrifying, not only in terms of the number of people who are hurt or killed, but the graphicness of the violence, and yet that's okay. But it's often when we take violence from the point of view of the person using violence. So you think of like the gangster films of the 30s became very controversial because they seemed to be making the gangster a sympathetic figure, or Natural Born Killers kind of more recently. Anytime the perpetrator of violence is seen as potentially a at least sympathetic character, people then start getting really uncomfortable.
Right. This is going to go on for forever. As long as we're telling stories and making movies, I mean, I go back to my youth. And this conversation was happening around Rambo movies.
Oh, sure.
You know,
sure.
They're extremely violent movies.
Absolutely.
But he was a hero.
Right. If the hero does it, it's okay. If the cowboy does it, it's okay. If the soldiers do it, it's okay. But when it's the sociopath, the criminal, it's taxi driver, it's natural born killers, then suddenly we say, oh. And then what inevitably happens is people believe that film violence is going to create copycats.
Right.
And that's, of course, the fear of the Joker, is that somehow people who have issues are going to use this film to motivate them or copy it to go out and create violence, which, you know, again, is not impossible, but there's an awful lot of violence anyway.
And, I mean, it didn't happen with Heath Ledger, didn't happen with Jack Nicholson, didn't happen with Cesar Romero.
No, or John Wick. We don't see people jumping off buildings, shooting at each other
to
recreate the moment in John Wick.
Exactly. Now, I mean, what I think the potential that we need to look at is that it is a big event.
Sure.
People will use big events like these big release movies to act up, you know, so it's got, I think, less to do with the storytelling of the movie and more about, you know, here's my biggest audience.
No one blames the country singer whose name I'm forgetting, but who was playing when the Las Vegas shooter happened. No one says, oh, the country music inspired that.
Exactly.
But you're right. Big events will do that. But I think the other side, if I can just sort of add to one little point to that, is I think it also tells us how important it is for our country and our culture to have a conversation about violence, particularly gun violence, that we don't seem to be able to have, that even this movie is trying to force us to have that conversation. So if there's anything good that comes out of the controversy surrounding Joker, I think it might be getting us as a culture to say, we need to think about how we understand violence and how we understand the relationship between guns and violence, because that seems to be an issue we just don't seem willing to actually tackle head on.
Yeah. And watching the trailer, I think there have been a couple of official trailers. This character, this portrayal of the Joker seems to be, to me, a lot more psychologically disturbed than I think some of the predecessors.
Sure.
At least from the standpoint of an origin story. So
sure.
When we look at the Heath Ledger performances, he's already there, right?
Yeah.
So we don't get to see how that psychosis came about. But this one is, I just find a bit more fascinating, because we do get to see someone who is disturbed, a misfit, someone who can't seem to fit into society, developing himself into being nihilistic and chaotic and murderous.
Sure. I think, you know, I haven't seen the movie, obviously, but I think it could be hit or miss, because I think the possibility of getting into the mind of a person who feels so alienated that violence and chaos seems attractive, like a taxi driver, is a potential for a really rich film. The flip side, though, is there are certainly examples of films that tried to show us inside the head of the monster. So, like, I think about Rob Zombie's remake of Halloween, where suddenly Michael Myers is this kind of sympathetic, troubled kid, and it kind of takes away the monstrosity or the terror. Or I think, you know, I think, or like the Hannibal films, as those kept going and we got to see young Hannibal as a child, and suddenly he's not quite so monstrous when you sort of see him in potty training and things like he's kind of but I have faith in the director, and I have faith in Joaquin Phoenix to provide us the kind of powerful glimpse at how a person goes to being so misunderstood and alienated that this becomes a logical path for them to follow.
So when this character was developed in the early 1940s, the clown prince of crime, it's kind of it seems to me like a bit of a gimmick. You just got a guy who's kind of dressed up like a clown. But as time has gone on, it seems like we're sort of borrowing from or capitalizing on our fears or some of the fears around clowns itself. So the clown as a scary as a scary monster or character is now seeping into the development or the continuing development of this character. So sort of tapping into our fear of clowns. Is that a fair Joe Lee assessment?
I think it is. And if you go back, you know, one of the inspirations for the Joker was Conrad Veidt, an actor in a 1928 silent film called The Man Who Laughs. It's an adaptation of a Victor Hugo novel in which a person is tortured, his face is cut into a permanent smile, and he becomes sort of a sideshow freak and then, you know, seeks his own revenge. And so I think there has always been something in that disturbingly happy face behind it, this kind of horrible violence. And if you look back, you know, Joker appears in the first full issue of Batman, number one. And in the early days, he is much more violent. Like, he kills people with the Joker toxin. Like, he's not, in the 50s and 60s, he became the goofy clown prince where he brings a mallet or he's got a hand buzzer and he doesn't kill people. But the early days, it was very, very violent. He killed a lot of people. Comics were kind of put under the scrutiny of kind of being needing to be more cleaned up and not so dangerous and not so violent. And so there's this kind of clean, sanitized version, which is the TV show
right.
We probably watched in reruns
mm-hmm.
as kids. And then in the 70s, it kind of shifted back. So
mm-hmm.
that now, if you look at the Joker in the DC Comics, he's incredibly violent psycho. He literally, in a recent run, cut his own face off and then reattached it, and at one point decides to reattach it upside down.
Oh, good.
So the flesh of his face is, so it's a really kind of much more mm-hmm. monstrous, terrifying figure, which is strange for those of us who grew up as kids watching the reruns of Adam West Batman, Cesar
yeah,
Romero.
You mentioned him killing people with chemicals. And that's one of the differences in the origin of the upcoming Joker film, where he is a struggling comic.
Right.
In the original, he's actually has a background as a chemist or something.
Yeah,
right?
So there's always been the Joker toxin
yeah.
was kind of part of that, but it doesn't seem to have anything to do with the current run, where he
right.
seems to be much more grounded in real world, not like
right.
know.
He's just making himself up, I guess, and not well. You know, because of clowns and entertainment and,
right.
and things like that. But yeah, the previous iterations, I believe he has a background as a chemist or something. He knows how to make chemical toxins and manipulate that and use that as a weapon. The Joker's interesting evolution goes from sort of flamboyant criminal with the bright clothes and the crazy laughter, at least in terms of film and television
sure.
portrayal, to this sinister mastermind, to sadistic sociopath.
Come, my funny fellows. We've got a little diamond cutting to do.
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What?
I always ask that of all my prey. I just like the sound of it.
I believe whatever doesn't kill you simply makes you
stranger.
Oh, I'm not gonna kill you.
I'm just gonna hurt you. Really, really bad.
So they're the voices of Cesar Romero from the early Batman television days, Jack Nicholson, who reprised the role, Heath Ledger, who brought a good bit of edge to it. And then the one that we don't talk often about is Jared Leto. From Suicide Squad. So,
for good reason, Joe. There's a good reason.
Go into it. Talk to me about it, because I find him to be pretty credible and edgy.
Wow. I'm going to leave now. Thank you for having me on the show.
What's your issue with Leto?
Well, I think there are two. First of all, I have no idea how good his performance was since it was cut down to about 35 seconds of screen time.
Yeah.
I was also I felt betrayed, as I think a lot of comic book fans were, that we had heard all of this publicity leading up, that he was totally immersed in the role, that he was sending dead rats to his castmates. And I thought, okay, he is going to be a huge part of this, and he's 35 seconds, and he's kind of a cheap thug. I mean, we don't see madness other than he wears a purple coat and he has, you know, tattoos on his face.
But didn't find that to be a fascinating 35 seconds?
No. I've had many fascinating 35 seconds, Joe, but I don't want to talk about my personal life. For me, it was another part of the train wreck that was Suicide Squad that was like, wow, how did you take the best movie trailer I've seen in a long time and turn it into an hour, 2 hours of the worst movie I've seen in a long time? So I get
where you're coming from. I mean, I personally enjoyed the movie. Was it one of the best ever? No. Could it have been better?
Yes.
Heck yeah. But I do find, just in watching the movie and watching clips of Leto's performance, that he sort of, in my opinion, elevated Ledger's performance. So we go from a goofy cartoon with Cesar Romero.
Totally goofy, yeah.
And then we go to, with Jack Nicholson, it's a little bit more measured, more sinister.
A darker cartoon, but still a cartoon. Tim Burton still making it, still looks like a cartoon.
But so pretty much Jack Nicholson.
It was, yes. Like I every mean, performance Jack Nicholson gives.
It's, right? it's Jack Johnny, Nicholson. Right. So there was, you know, he brought the sort of the natural sinister thing that he can do. And then we get to Ledger, which is very measured.
Whole other level.
Very calculating and sadistic. But I just thought you take that and you add bursts of violent behavior on top of it, and that's where you get Leto.
I feel the exact opposite. The moment when Heath Ledger's character grabs, I believe it was Maggie Gyllenhaal playing it, the girlfriend role in the party, and he pulls her close and he's got the knife. To me, that was genuine chaotic menace.
Mm-hmm.
When Jared Leto looks across at Harley Quinn and says, I'm going to hurt you really bad, I just thought, you're already hurting me because you took my $8 to see this stupid movie.
We're going to leave it right there. I'm not going to win this argument.
No.
But the so talk to me about who is your favorite Joker.
I mean, I think it has to be Heath Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
At least, again, if you go back to the cartoonish, I mean, I thought the original Batman cartoon character was great. I love the fact that he wouldn't even shave his mustache. So if you go back and look, it's just white paint over the dark brown mustache. So that level of
like... He probably had to pay Cesar Romero a lot more money to shave that off.
He was going to do something else. He just popped in, threw some makeup on, laughed, and walked out. But what I loved about Heath Ledger's performance is, as we were saying earlier, he arrives fully formed. We have no idea who this person is. He keeps telling us different variations of want to know how I got these scars. He is utter complete chaos. He's in total control of the movie all the way through to the end, even to the point where he gets Batman to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is just, to me, it's still the best Joker story put on kind of moving picture medium.
Yeah. No, he brought a... I mean, he's a brilliant actor. And
yes,
sadly taken from this world too soon. But yeah, there was a great deal of angst watching that. And, you know, I've never been afraid of the Joker up until that point.
Yep.
You know,
menace.
I can watch that movie and say this guy is a problem.
Yeah,
for society. Are you going to go see the Joker?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it.
Talk about what your expectations are.
I think we're going to get the Taxi Driver of the comic book universe,
mm-hmm.
which in fairness is something that I think a lot of people have been waiting for. I mean, we're getting more and more superhero. I mean, that's just the kind of dominant genre of the last 10, 15 years.
Interesting you bring up Taxi Driver because De Niro's in this movie.
De Niro's in this movie. We've got the pedigree. We've got the approach. But what we haven't seen in comic books, I mean, Marvel's done a great job of kind of pushing the boundary of the genre so that there's kind of action film, but there's also comedy and there's some romance and there's some science fiction. But no one has kind of taken the idea of the superhero film and really taken it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Not just grounding it in reality, but saying, what would it be like to live in a world where people are capable of these sorts of things?
Yeah.
And this may be that film, or it may be a misstep. We'll have to wait and see.
Do we know if the psychologist in this movie is Harley Quinn?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay,
no.
So that
and,
that
and in the comic book canon, that would happen. She meets him in Arkham Asylum, so that mm-hmm. would be post his origin and probably post some of his conflict
right.
with Batman.
Okay. So, well, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Hopefully, we can. I wanted to do this show because I wanted to do a show without spoilers. I wanted to set some expectations, but we'll give it some time and. Perhaps we can come back together and offer some spoilers.
We will spoil the fire out of this thing. Let us go. We'll let you have it.
Man, hey, always a pleasure having you having you join us. So we're going to take a little bit of a break. When we come back, I'll speak with Travis Langley, editor of the book The Joker Psychology, Evil Clowns and the Women Who Love Them, about the psychology of the popular DC Comics villain.
Syracuse University will mark its 150th year in 2020. To mark the occasion, WAER will take you through SU's history, looking at traditions existing and past, honoring tragedies, and celebrating accomplishments. I'm Katie Zolkowski. Join us for Her Hilltop High, a new series that will explore Syracuse's storied past and visions for the future. Listen to the first episode now, only at WAER.org.
You can say many things about the Joker, a criminal, flamboyant, crazy, but since he first squared up with Batman in the early 1940s, the Joker has evolved into one of pop culture's most complex psychological creations, criminal mastermind and unhinged psychopath. Helping us understand the twisted mind of the clown prince of crime is Travis Langley, editor of the book The Joker Psychology, which is a fun, frightening, and fascinating look into the psyche of a madman. He is a psychology professor at Henderson State University, author of Batman and Psychology, the volume and editor of The Walking Dead Psychology, Star Wars Psychology, and Game of Thrones Psychology. So tell us a little bit about how this book came about.
Well, I have authored the book, Batman and Psychology, A Dark and Stormy Night. It came out 7 years ago and has done well every single week since it was first released. And in that time, I've edited or been the lead writer on a dozen other books, looking at different popular culture topics, and people have been asking about the Joker the entire time. And for a while, I was kind of reluctant because we don't know what goes on inside the Joker's head. We don't know his background for certain. And for storytelling purposes, that's best. But it did occur to me, there are real criminals where we don't know what to believe about their thoughts, we don't know what to believe about their background, and we still need to study them anyway. We still need to try to understand some things on the psychology of evil. Not that we tend to use the word evil in psychology, but we are looking at the psychology of evil. And the publisher's publicist, in a conversation we had a couple of years ago, she said, well, what if you make it about the Joker and Harley Quinn? I said, okay, if it's still the majority the Joker, but we can also talk about Harley. We know her background and thoughts, and there's hope for her. And we also know the abusive nature of their relationship. So the book is still, the majority of it's about the Joker, but we also have a considerable part about him and Harley.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote the majority of the book. We also have other experts, forensic psychologists who work with real psychopaths, bringing their knowledge into a couple of chapters. A number of different therapists for the last chapter talking about how would this type of therapy help the Joker? No. Would that? No. Would that? No. That one will make him worse. Well, what about Harley? And these help Harley. And at sometimes in her life when she's motivated to change and has the social support, then yeah. And so this is how it all came about.
Very cool. So when the movie is coming out in a few days by the time this thing airs. So is there a consensus on the personality disorder that the Joker has been diagnosed with?
Well, there are certain things we cannot know, but the things that are easy to agree on, we all see him as a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
He fits every criterion for psychopathy. You know, he does not have empathy for other people. He's indifferent to your feelings. He exploits others. His behavior is incredibly antisocial. And some people misunderstand that word. It does not mean unsociable. It means opposing the social norms,
mm-hmm.
opposing society's rules and expectations. And he absolutely fits the term psychopathy. However, that's not a modern DSM term, so we'd have to say antisocial personality disorder, which is still very limited. There are plenty of people who have those conditions that don't qualify for something as extreme. And so we have to start looking at other things, the extreme narcissism and his manipulativeness and the outright cruelty that are in there. The thing we cannot really know well, as he's usually written, is the Joker psychotic or not?
Mm-hmm.
And it might look obviously psychotic. He gets called that by two different people to his face in the 89 movie, and Batman calls him that as well. But does he have hallucinations? Not that we know of. Does he have delusions, beliefs that are severely out of touch with reality? He does not think you're a fence post. He knows you're his victim. When he kills you, he's not doing it because he has a delusion about you. He knows he's killing you. That's what's fun about it for him. A few writers have dabbled in exploring ways in which, okay, this might be something more psychotic. Steve Englehart wrote a story where the Joker tried to copyright fish as a sign that he truly was insane, and the Joker could not understand why people would not let him copyright fish. Okay, maybe that means he's crazy. Maybe it just means he does not know copyright law. The thing that comes closest to showing that, yeah, he is psychotic is in the graphic novel The Killing Joke. There's this point, there's this backstory there, but we don't know for sure that it's his definite history. He tells Batman later in there, you know, sometimes I remember it one way, sometimes I remember it another. If I have to have a past, I prefer it to be multiple choice. When you've got that extreme uncertainty, possibly completely delusional memory of your own history, yeah, that is psychotic.
Yeah, when I look back at the Jack Nicholson performance and that origin story, he seemed to be sort of a regular criminal who fell into a vat of chemicals, and I don't know if that certainly altered his physical appearance and maybe altered his mental appearance. In the upcoming movie, which is also an origin story, we're seeing someone who is actually under the care of a mental health professional. So we're getting probably someone who has been either born with or developed some mental disorder. So some differences there. There is a section in the book that talks about psychopath or sociopath.
Right.
What's the difference there?
One point is that there is no standard definition for sociopath.
Okay.
There are a bunch of different definitions. And some of them are very useful definitions, but there is no standard definition for that word. And if it weren't for the fact that it was so popularly known, I would avoid the word, but people do need to ask about it because they hear that all the time. One of the definitions is that it is a person who was not a psychopath, but life circumstances turned them into that.
Mm-hmm.
And people who read stories such as The Killing Joke and they read this background of this perfectly, of this fairly normal guy who suddenly becomes this master villain, that shows that he's a sociopath. That's not realistic. Even when it might be one severe thing that pushes someone over the edge, and yeah, that definitely happens, but you don't get serial killers. Or in his case, the serial spree mass murderer does not come out of a perfectly normal person, or even a more neurotic normal person. It takes somebody who's always had something very dark. They've had a lifetime of having something missing from them. We can use transcranial magnetic stimulation to shut off the more conscience-oriented parts of your brain, the ones more focused on morality, so you would fail to notice the moral dilemma in a situation. That doesn't turn you into a sadist, though.
Right, right. Now, you talk a lot in the book about the relationship with the Joker and Harley Quinn. Is he capable of love? And if not, what is the attraction to Harley Quinn? Is it just to possess or manipulate? What's going on there?
As it's been written, it's about possessing and manipulating. It's about, of course, the Joker loves to lure people into bringing out the worst side of themselves. The movie The Dark Knight is repeatedly showing what he can inspire people to do through fear and where he can inspire people to do terrible things. And the Joker loves bringing out the worst in others. There's a bit of something like Lucifer in him there, and he is Harley Quinn's Lucifer. And he has tried to kill her a number of times in the comics as well. It's just she stayed attracted to him until she broke away from him. We are most interested in her when she has left the Joker.
Mm-hmm. What is it about his personality or potential disorder that requires that he be or have a need to be in the spotlight as this grandiose showman?
That comes from a lot of different sources. We would honestly have to know a little bit more about his original background, because some people, the need to be in the spotlight comes out of having been emotionally neglected in younger days, while with others, it came out of being so heavily indulged that some parent taught them that the world revolved around them. And we have no clue as to which of those extremes, but it would likely have been something extreme.
Mm-hmm. Now, before I let you go, thinking about all of the sort of past portrayals of the Joker, would they all have the same basic diagnosis
in terms of
different diagnosis for each of those portrayals?
You cannot take the Cesar Romero Joker and insert him into the Dark Knight. The Cesar Romero Joker would be more histrionic than anything else, defined by the attention, the dramatic behavior. You know, the Nicholson Joker, he's a psychopath. That is the largest thing that is obvious with him. The Ledger Joker is harder to get a bead on, although there are some signs that he has been on antipsychotic medications. Those smack sounds he makes, the flicks of his tongue,
mm-hmm.
He seems to be presented as somebody who was previously on antipsychotic medication and now has continuing side effects from them.
This is a fascinating dive into popular culture. Travis Langley, editor of the book, The Joker Psychology, thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
And I thank you guys for joining us today on this trip down Joker Lane. Psychopath, a sociopath, I don't know. He could be either. He could be both. I think I know for sure that he is definitely batshit crazy. Looking forward to seeing the Joker movie, which is coming out on October 4th. And I want to thank you for joining us for another episode of Pop Life. It is a production of WAER Public Media. Our producer is Kevin Kloss. For more Pop Life, you can stalk us on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or Google, or wherever you get your on-demand content. Until next time, I'm Joe Lee.